Good morning, Shalom Aleichem, everybody. We are up to Matan Torah, Parshas Yisro, 5781. Amazing. Amazing. I hope to share some Torah today from Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Twersky, one of the Zecher Tzadik Lebracha, one of our Gedolim that unfortunately passed away this past week amongst the Torah that we're learning today. Parshas Yisro, Matan Torah. So let's begin at the beginning of the parasha. Vayishma Yisro Chohen Midyan Chosei Moshe. Vayishma Yisro. Rashi points out here famously, Mashmu Ashama Uba. What did Yisro hear that caused him to come? Says Rav Leib Eger. Rav Leib Eger was a son of Rabbi Kiva Eger. In his Sefer of Torah's MS on Chumash, he writes here that it's fascinating that this story of Yisro juxtaposes the story of Matan Torah. The entire, probably the most important moment in Jewish history is in our parsha, but it's preceded by the story of Yisro. And why is that? Why are these two stories connected over here? So he writes the following. He says, because in order to be somebody that's mekabel the Torah, in order to be somebody that lives a Torah lifestyle, but someone that internalizes Torah, the first thing that you need is the power of listening, is the ability to listen. He says this pasuk, Vayishma Yisro, serves as the appropriate hakdama, the introduction to Matan Torah. Vayishma Yisro. The Bali Musar say, what was his greatest attribute? Mashmu Ashama Uba. Many of us hear lots of great things. Many of us hear very inspiring speeches. We hear very important lessons. Not everybody acts upon those things. Yisro heard about Kriyas Yamsuf. He heard about Milchamas Amalek. So did other people. Yisro followed through. He came to the Jewish people. Mashmu Ashama Uba. That's his greatest praise. In the 48 Kinyani Torah and Pirkei Avos, one of the Kinyanim, in order to, the ability to acquire Torah, is Shmias Ozen, is this ability to listen carefully to the things around us, to people around us. And you see, the greatest leaders are those that are the greatest listeners. They said this about the Lubavitcher Rebbe. If you went to him, you felt like you were the only person in the room. Rabbi Sachs writes that. In the first meeting with Rabbi Lubavitcher Rebbe, he was so, you know, moved and blown away by him. Here was this guy that was hearing, you know, people's sorrows and, you know, holding up Klal Yisrael each and every day. But whoever came into his office, it was like there was nobody else existed in the entire world except for the person in front of him. And that led to this deep connection with him. Rabbi Twersky, as a psychiatrist, as a Rav, as the Klal Yisrael's psychiatrist, he helps so many people. It all starts with this power of shmia, this power of listening, and then following through on that listening. That is the first idea. That is from Reb Leib Eger, the son of Reb Yekiva Eger. Let's go on to, we'll go back and forth today, but right now let's focus on Matan Torah. The psukim that go right before Matan Torah in order to present the picture of what Matan Torah is the following. Bachodesh HaShlishi, Latzeis B'nei Yisrael Me'eretz Mitzrayim. The Pasuk states, in the third month, which month is the third month from when the Jewish people left Egypt? Which month is that? That is
Bachodesh,
right? It's not really the third month because they left in the middle of Nisan and then they had the whole Iyar and then the beginning of Sivan. It's like really a month and a half. It's 49 days. We know how many days it is. We count Sefiras Omer every single year, but they count the beginning of Nisan. The Torah counts the beginning of Nisan already. That was Geula already, even though they're in Egypt. Bachodesh HaShlishi, but let's say it's B'nei Yisrael, Me'eretz Yisrael, Bayom HaZen, on this day, Ba'o Mimidbar Sinai. So it sounds like Rosh Chodesh, the Rabbi Yom Hazeh, they left, they came to Midbar Sinai. Then the next pasuk states the following. Vayisu mirefidim, they left Refidim. And they went to the desert of Sinai, and they encamped around the mountain. We know famously, one heart, one nation. Now, the Shemi Shmuel asks the following question. These two psukim are redundant. The first pasuk already told us, on the third month, on the first day of the third month, the Jewish people left and entered Midbar Sinai. Then the next pasuk tells us again, they left from Rephidim, they went in the beginning of the month, and they went to Midbar Sinai. So the Shemi Shmuel, the Sukkachev Rebbe, Avraham Bornstein, writes, I don't understand. What is this repetition over here? Why would they repeat the same pasuk twice? What is the Torah teaching us over here? So he says the following: Bechodesh Shlisi, v'yesh lahavin shehiskir meikara biyasan l'midbar Sinai v'acharkach. He says first we mentioned going to Midbar Sinai, and then we mentioned it again. Why is that? So he says the following, and he says this is true, something, a concept that is true bechol haTorah kula. And he says that if you think about it, to think of it, someone made a comment to me about this past week, or I overheard something. It will come to my mind probably after I finish this year. But we spend so much time in preparation. You know, we spend so much time preparing for something, and sometimes the moment that we're actually preparing for takes a snap of a finger. You know, think about, we spend hours and hours and hours preparing for the holiday of Sukkot, right? And then what's the mitzvah? You shake a lulav. Shaking a lulav is not even the mitzvah, just picking it up, according to most. That act within itself is the preparation, is the mitzvah. But we spend hours and hours and hours in preparation for the mitzvah. And then the mitzvah atzmo, the mitzvah itself, just takes a brief moment. So he says here the following, that here the Jewish people weren't yet in Midbar Sinai. They weren't yet surrounding the mountain in the first pasuk, but they were preparing for surrounding the mountain. They had their goals set on receiving the Torah. They had their goals to connect and rendezvous with the Almighty, with the Ribono Shel Olam over here. And the Shemi Shmuel says, when you put your mind to something, it's like you are already there. Not physically, spiritually, figuratively, you are there already. You're in that zone. You're there, even though you're not physically there. So he writes that the first pasuk is not that they were physically there yet in Midbar Sinai, but they prepared to be there. They were working on themselves. It was like, ke'ilu, they were there already. And the second pasuk is they were actually physically present at Midbar Sinai. The Shemi Shmuel continues and says, this is true for a Jew when it comes to Shabbos, right? Beit Shammai, Beit Sila would prepare for Shabbos the entire week. The Gemara tells us they had different ways to prepare. Some would take the food, they would save the food, or others would look for the better food. Either way, they would prepare for Shabbos each and every day. That means that Shabbos for them just wasn't every 7 days, but they became Shabbos Jews. They became Jews when you're mitzapet for Shabbos on Sunday, on Monday, Hayom Yom Shvi, you know, Chamishi l'Shabbos, Hayom Rishon l'Shabbos. When we prepare for Shabbos, it becomes like a Shabbosic day. It becomes special, it becomes holier. It becomes, you know, we're pining. We can't be in Eretz Yisrael. They've stopped Aliyah to a certain degree now in Eretz Yisrael. Fortunately, who thought this would happen in our day? But for a Jew that's mitzapeh for Eretz Yisrael, a Jew that yearns there, it's like they're there. It's like they're there already. That's what this pasuk tells us. It's not actually, not really. They weren't actually there yet, but when they're preparing to go there, it's like they're there. If we live Eretz life, 1 second, then it's like we're there. We can tap into that Kedusha, tap into that reality, and be present there. Yes, Mendy, go ahead.
But is the preparation a separate mitzvah, or is it part of the mitzvah? Like, for instance, when you build your sukkah, right, the mitzvah is to eat it. But when you're building it, Is that preparation a separate mitzvah, or is it part of the mitzvah of the sukkah?
So there are certain mitzvos that the hachana ksuva b'torah. It's called the hechsher mitzvah ksuva b'torah, right? It's a big machlokas whether there's a mitzvah to build a sukkah or not. You have to have a sukkah to live in it, right? But that's a discussion. It's a separate mitzvah. It's a separate concept. The Sfas Emes is a great line. He says the mitzvah is l'sha'a. The mitzvah that you do is for a moment. Hachana, preparation, is l'olam. Preparation is l'olam. And that's not l'olam. You could be consumed by that. You could become, full of anxiety. Oh my gosh, then I'm not doing enough preparation. I can't do, I should be preparing for Shabbos already, for next Shabbos already today. Yeah,
maybe.
But one second, Nathan. Mm-hmm. But hachana is l'olam, that you tap into like this nitzchius, this into eternity, when you live your life in a certain way. Tom Coughlin, who was the coach of the Giants, Super Bowl winning coach two times, he had a rule. His rule was, mm-hmm. if you came 15 minutes early, 10 minutes early to a meeting, you were late. I think you had to come 15 minutes early to every meeting to be on time. If we applied that rule if we applied that rule to davening, how much greater would a davening be if we got there 15 minutes before the actual start time? To prepare ourselves, put us in the right mindset, say extra tehillim, it would really, say all the korbanos, start pesukim early, whatever it might be, that hachana really taps, gets us into the right mode, the right modality. Go ahead, Nathan.
Rabbi, for those who say that building a sukkah is a mitzvah, what do they say is the reason we don't say a bracha?
So they would say you do, and the bracha that you make on the first night of Sukkot, that's Shechianu, and that Leshei Basukkah, that Shechianu goes on the building of the sukkah too. It's retroactive, because you can only make the bracha, concretize it, when there's actually a mitzvah to live in it. That's what some argue. A great question.
Rabbi.
Yeah, go ahead. Before we get to the
really make the Shechianu when you finish building the sukkah, but it's much nicer to be in your suit and be all dressed up.
Yeah.
With that bracha. So you delay it to when you say the Shechianu by Kiddush.
Yeah, some do say that. That's not the minhag. That's not what we do for that reason. Okay, let's the Kutzker Rebbe. The Kutzker Rebbe asks the following question. Humility. There's a lot that's being written, contemporarily in popular psychology on the idea of humility, and how leaders, the greatest of leaders, need humility. We obviously know this already. We know this from the beautiful wisdom of the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu was the person that got closest to Kadosh Baruch Hu, the greatest person that ever lived, and he was anav mikol adam apnei hadama. He was the humblest of people to ever live this earth. And the Kutzker Rebbe makes the following point. He says, why is it that the Torah was given on Har Sinai, right? What's the medrash that we learned as young children? Oh, little Har Sinai, right? My children could act this out already. Little Har Sinai, the smallest of all the mountains. All the other mountains were saying, pick up, go on me, go on me, go on me. Har Sinai kept quiet. So the Kutzker Rebbe says, and you learn from there, that it's important to be humble. That he was the smallest, and the Torah is given on him because he was the smallest of the mountains. So the Kutzker Rebbe says, let's say better. Why don't we give the mountain, why don't we receive the Torah in a valley, in an emek? If you really need to be humble, so you really want to drive this lesson home, give the Torah in a valley. No? And I'm sure one of your children, someone has asked this question before. Maybe you thought they were a little bit of a nudnik, but what's the Kutzker Rebbe says the following. So an emek, a valley, has no mila. It's not raised at all, has no elevation. He says that somebody that's humble, true humility comes from somebody that actually has something to be arrogant over. has something to show off about, has a wisdom, an intellect, a talent, a character trait, a something that they can be arrogant about, they can show off about. So the Torah wasn't given in a valley because the valley doesn't have any of that. The valley doesn't have any elevation, is not high at all in a, you know, in a physical sense. The Torah was given on a mountain, not the highest of mountains, but of the lower type of mountains, to show that to have humility, right? Somebody that's really humble is somebody that actually has something that they could show off to, but they know better and they don't. This is something that Rabbi Twersky himself wrote a tremendous, tremendous amount about, which would tonight, Bezrat Hashem, will talk about more about his, the relationship that he has between humility and self-esteem through a comment that he has in his Sefer on the Chumash. But this, you know, humility means you know who you are, right? And nonetheless, you don't use that to step on other individuals. Okay, let's go on. Sorry, someone have a comment? Jules? Okay, sorry. Let's go on, Rabbi Twersky. Rabbi Dr. Twersky has a great Sefer on Chumash. Rabbi Twersky wrote 60
Rabbi.
Different Svarim. Yes.
Just another thought.
The
Torah could have been given to the civilization at the time that was had power, but it was not. It was given to us who had no power, like military power. So it shows that the Torah. I'm talking about humble.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's a great point. Yeah, it was given to the Jewish people. We were not. The parsha in Veschanan, at the end of Veschanan, this pasuk not spoken about a lot. Rabbi Sachs has an essay about this, where the Torah tells us that we're never going to be the biggest nation. There were, you know, in numbers, we're never going to be the strongest nation in numbers. We're not going to be that way. Eretz Yisrael is not the biggest country. You would think the Jewish people, the promised people, the chosen people, will get this huge plot of land that's going to be the country. No, Eretz Yisrael, it's about the size of New Jersey, you know. So I think that Mr. Epstein, it goes right into this point over here. Next idea.
Rabbi.
Yeah.
I always say that Moshe Rabbeinu, for example, was able to say by Korach, Yivra Hashem, he was able to conjure up a nace that Korach was punished on that. And that second, there was the earth opened up. Somebody, it's not humility that he felt nothing of himself. Moshe Rabbeinu knew his kaychus. He knew that if he does this, if he says in Briyo Yivra Hashem, Hashem will make the nes. It's still humility doesn't mean he has nothing to show off for, nothing to be great, but he knows how, like you said, knows how not to let that define himself, that arrogance define him. And that's exactly the point that you made.
Great. Thank you. Let's just go on the same theme and then we'll end with Rabbi Twersky. The Noam Elimelech, Rav Elimelech Melezhinsk, has a beautiful comment at the last pasuk in our parsha. After the Aseres Adibros are given, we're given a bunch of other mitzvos. One of the mitzvos we're given is Lotala b'malos al mizbechi, asher lo tigala ervasecha alam. Torah tells us that when we have a ramp that's leading up to the mizbeach, the ramp should not be made of steps. Why not? Rashi points out, but it's pretty clear in the pasuk. Asher lo tigala ervasecha alav, because when the kohen who's wearing a almost like a kilt going up the steps, his erva, his nakedness would be shown if he has to go from step to step to step. That's why there's a ramp leading up to it. The Bali Musar, it's quoted in the name of the Chafetz Chaim, but I couldn't find it inside. The Bali Musar say that it's a ramp and not steps, because when it comes to our personal growth, our Avodas Hashem, our service of God, the way that should be done and that should be expressed is never being comfortable where you are. So if you're on a step, you go up steps, you could be safe and comfortable in that one step and not move from there. But when you're on a ramp, you always feel tension, either going back or moving forward. There's always a tension one way or the other. So that's why you're on a ramp, which represents our Avodas Hashem, because you're either going up or you're going down. It's very difficult to stay stagnant in our growth, because if you're not growing, then essentially you're going back. That's the inertia of the ramp. But the Noam Elimelech says a different idea, and this goes based similar to what we were saying before. Volotala b'ma'alos. Shalotachzik atzmecha b'ma'alos ashalotigale ervascha alav. He says one should not step on other people with their ma'alos. Ma'alos means steps here in the context of the pasuk, but it could also mean milos, that many, all of us, not many, but we, each and every one of us, has our own unique and distinct ways that we are special, that we make what makes us great, that we have things that we are better at than other people, or we have things that other people don't have. So he says like this, v'lotale b'ma'alos al mizbechi. Don't raise up our milos over other people. If one does that, that is like showing ervas ha'alav. It's showing one's cherpa. That's a true busha to one to who one is and what they have. Those great traits are given to us to help other people, to facilitate growth, to facilitate chesed, to help other people in any way, shape, or form. They should never be used to look at me. Look at me. Look who I am. Look how great I am. Asher lo tigale evrascha alav. Because that really reveals the cherpa, the erva of an individual when they try to use those things that one has to give themselves more kavod.
Rabbi.
Yes.
Question from Mara Honey here. She wants to know how come there were steps by the menorah?
It wasn't a ram.
Yeah, by the menorah, see, there weren't, I don't think it was essential to have the steps there. I think it was more practical that it wasn't essential to the menorah service. It was more practical that if the Kohen wasn't tall enough, right, which was probably more often the case, Jews aren't so tall, then that's how you got there. But here, it was essential to the Mizbeach to have a way to get to the top. You need that. Right, so that's a good question. That's what I think off the top of my head, off the cuff. But we could think about it more, especially when we go to Parshas Truma. Maybe we'll try to find a deeper answer to that question. The second of the commandments, right? Moshe Rabbeinu, Ten Commandments, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. And then the second commandment is Lo Tisa Hashem Hashem Elokecha Lashav. Rabbi Tursky, I mentioned before, wrote 60 different books, over 60. He has a Tursky and Chumash came out about 10 years ago, maybe a little bit longer. It is excellent. Good vorts, good Hasidish vorts on the Parsha. You got to get Tursky and Chumash. It's really, really good. I personally don't have it at home. I have all those other, I have a bunch of other ones, but my parents have it. So whenever I go there, I look inside. So he says the following. The commandment forbids swearing falsely. That is the mitzvah here, that it's usser, it's prohibited to swear falsely. The Talmud tells us, the Gemara in Shavuos tells us, that when this commandment was given, the entire world trembled to scare us, to shake us in our boots, right? To instill the fear of God in us from, lo aleinu, swearing falsely. So he says, what was so scary about this mitzvah? Why did this one need to be so scary? So the author of the Chazyonos Avraham says that this commandment is a prerequisite of all the commandments that follow this. Number two was a prerequisite, Anochi was Amuna, introducing Hashem to the world, right? And number two is a prerequisite for all the other ones. Now, what does that mean? He says, our capacity to rationalize is remarkable. The human mind is ingenious in producing logical reasons for something one wishes to do. Rationalizations, of course, are nothing but good reasons to cover up the true reason. The danger of rationalization is that we may delude ourselves to actually believe the conjured up reasons. People have justified stealing and cheating, saying that they use the money for worthy causes. some people who do not observe Shabbos since the laws are in Shabbos are obsolete. For example, making fire was prohibited back then. Would it involve work? But today it's pushing a button. What's the work involved with it? The real reasons for these justifications is that they wish to satisfy their desires. So they rationalize in order to eliminate any obstacles. However, if they had to swear to the reason for a particular act, the severity of transgression, God will not absolve anyone who takes his name in vain. Might break through their self-deception. If the rationalization was eliminated, they would be discouraged from doing the forbidden act. This commandment is therefore the fundamental to observance of the entire Torah. The convulsions of the earth when this commandment was pronounced served to impress upon the Israelites its awesome nature and made them cognizant of the importance of adhering to the truth. That this mitzvah, in a way, Lo Tisa Shem Hashem Elokecha L'Shav, represented something in every other mitzvah, this concept of rationalization. I'm allowed to swear falsely over here because of X, Y, Z. When one is already getting into the because, they already know they're going down a rabbit hole. They're going down a very, very slippery slope, a very, very slippery path. And that is true about all the mitzvahs, especially the next eight that were coming right after this. The ability to rationalize is something that, again, is a human condition and human nature, that we do that all the time. But it's something that if we continuously, if we're not honest with ourselves, then it could be something very, very scary in use of our lives. And that's what Rabbi Dr. Tursky shares here, Tzatzal shares here in the commandment of Lutisa Hashem Hashem Elokecha Lashav. So just to review today, five Divrei Torah for Parshas Yisro, for Matan Torah, Vayishma Yisro, the prerequisite, the Hachana for Matan Torah is Vayishma Yitro, is to listen, the ability to listen. Shem Yishmuel teaches us that when we prepare, when we set our mind to something, it's like we're there already, being a Shabbos Jew in Eretz Yisrael. Dika Jew, we had the Kutzke Rebbe, why the smallest of mountains, why not a valley? Teaches something about humility. And Noam Elimelech, lo tala b'malos, don't step on other people through your greatness. And number five, Rabbi Dr. Twersky, that's all discussed, lo tisa shem shem lokecha l'shav. Why was that so significant? Why did the earth tremble when we heard that aveira? We understood that mitzvah. Because the ability to rationalize can undermine our observance of the entire Torah. Wish everybody a great week. Thank you for joining us. And tonight we'll discuss more Torah from Rabbi Twersky related to the Parsha. Kol Tov.
Rabbi, just to make a quick